Welcome to the Enlightening Motherhood Podcast. I'm your host, Emily Hamblin.
And I'm your co-host, Ashley Schultz.
As moms who are currently in the thick of raising kids with big emotions, we know firsthand how challenging their intense behaviors can be.
And that a little support can go a long way.
This is a non-judgmental community that was created for you or any mom who's feeling overwhelmed, frustrated, or stressed.
Each week, either Emily or I will share our experiences, offer practical tips, and interview experts in the field so you can be empowered to help your children with their challenges.
Join us as we help you enlighten motherhood. Hello, everyone. This is Emily. Happy February, wherever you are, whatever that means to you. Here in the United States, where I live, many people celebrate Valentine's Day in February. Now, typically, Valentine's Day has traditionally been seen as like a romantic day and a way to show love to others. And it's fine if, you know, that's what you want to do. For me and my family, I know I tend to just have a lot of fun with my kids with like pink and red and purple things. Whatever you want to do is fine with Valentine's Day. But this month on the podcast and in Emotionally Intelligent Kids and in Emotionally Healthy Families, we're going to be focusing on this idea of love just as an excuse to talk about things that really do help us with our emotional health in our families. And so this podcast episode today is one that my podcast co-host Ashley prepared for us on helping your teenager with their self-esteem. Now, if you don't yet have a teenager, then one day you will. And so this is relevant. Plus, she shares a lot of really good tips that are relevant for our younger children. I'm going to go ahead and just transition to what she's prepared for us and let it run uninterrupted. I do want to make sure that you put a mental note, reminder in your phone, whatever, to tune in next week and the following week so we can continue this conversation on helping our children build their self-esteem, their self-confidence, their self-love, and also working on our own self-love and our own positivity of ourselves and handling those negative thoughts, negative feelings that tend to come up towards ourselves. And let's address all of these things and work towards having much more emotionally healthy families as we do so. Okay. Enjoy Ashley's podcast today.
Well, hello, everyone. This is Ashley, and it has been quite some time since I've been here with you. So I am really happy to be back today and welcome. And I'm excited to be sharing with you today some things that have been on my heart and mind that are really important to me. And I feel like it's something that is very pertinent to many teenagers and kids. So, and that is boosting your teenager's self-esteem. I'm gearing this towards teenagers and preteens because I know I've mentioned that we have five kids and our oldest is 13, almost 14. And then we have a preteen who is 11 and then three younger kids. So as I am doing my best to parent in this new stage of life with teenagers, a teenager and a preteen, I'm kind of having to tweak some things and think of some things in parenting a little bit differently, not all. But if you're in that same boat, I just want to have some resources for you as well as you're parenting teenagers, as well as there's a lot here for young children as well. So many adolescents struggle with self-esteem. I think that's pretty common, but our neurodiverse teens struggle especially because we know that they have struggles with lagging executive functioning skills like time blindness or forgetting things, losing things, lots of different executive functioning skills, and that they also might have social impairments or maybe there's anxiety or OCD that are really hard for them to cope with. Lots of teenagers compare themselves to others, and certainly social media does not help that at all. They might feel like they fall short or they're not good enough or they can't please their parents enough. And a lot of our neurodivergent teenagers receive negative messaging. So they might, especially with ADHD, they might be told often, almost constantly, either directly or indirectly, that they miss the mark socially, academically, or in other areas. And when you're constantly getting that negative messaging, it can be difficult to focus on positives. And if you add in personality traits like being highly sensitive or a perfectionist, then their self-esteem can definitely take a big hit. And a lot of teens, and I think kids too, and adults, turn to masking, which is a term that started in the autism community, I believe. But it's basically just covering up or trying to appear as your neurotypical peers appear and kind of cover up where you're falling short. And that can be really mentally exhausting. And of course, we want to raise kids who have high self-esteem, who like themselves and believe that they are capable and worthy, because as a result, they will make better choices and become more resilient and push harder to reach their goals. And then they'll be more likely to experience happiness and be successful and emotionally healthy. And of course, we want all of that for our kids. So it's really difficult to see them struggling in this way. Because if your mind is like mine, you kind of turn to the worst case scenario and fear for their future. And well, what if they can't obtain all of those things that I just mentioned? And what if they don't like themselves? And, you know, it can just kind of have this snowball effect, or at least that's where my mind goes. But what are we looking for when we talk about low self-esteem? You might be seeing negative talk about themselves or others, and that could look like name calling, teasing, gossiping to make themselves feel better by putting other people down. They might get easily frustrated with themselves or others, avoid new things, or not take opportunities. Don't want to take ownership for their mistakes, or they just flat out won't take ownership for their mistakes. They make excuses, they blame others, or they lie to cover up their mistakes. And I always thought that was more of a trait of perfectionism, which I think it can be as well, but it's also part of low self-esteem. They might give up quickly, dismiss compliments, show a tendency for comparisons, have strong reactions to criticism, and even constructive criticism. So they might get really defensive when you are just trying to guide them and make suggestions. They might be concerned about what others think about them, which again, I think with adolescents, that is common. They might feel unloved and unwanted, even if it is only perceived. And you're doing your very best to not make them feel that way, but to make them feel loved. They might have difficulty making friends or spend time with friends that they know are not a good influence because they think poorly of themselves. So they don't have the confidence to sort of step away from those friends. They might have low levels of motivation and interest, and they might come across as aggressive or bossy. And sometimes people act this way to cover up feeling badly about themselves. And they could have positive self-esteem in one area or in some of these areas and low self-esteem in other areas. And this is not a comprehensive list of all of the things to look for, but these are some things that as I was researching and learning about low self-esteem in teens specifically and preteens that you're going to see commonly if they do have low self-esteem. So research shows that low self-esteem in teens is the strongest predictor of depression, and also that it can cause them to be more anxious. And research also shows that high self-esteem is a protective factor against mental health issues, and it predicted fewer symptoms of anxiety and depression when studying those with high self-esteem 3 years later. So as I was coming to this realization that several of my kids struggle with low self-esteem, it kind of hit me really hard. And I will be perfectly honest with you that it was really emotional for me, and I started to internalize it. I started having unhelpful thoughts like, I caused this in my kids. I must not be attentive enough, or I must not be spending enough time with them. And if I connected with them more, or if I spoke their love language better, or how, what did I do wrong, kind of a thing. And it was really emotional for me, and it took a while to process. And I went running when I was trying to process. Exercise helps me to work through things and to keep anxiety at bay and to process. And I just cried as I ran because I was having such a difficult time with this realization. But I've been able to work through it a little bit now, and I can say that I am a good mom, and that also some of my kids have struggles with this. And if you are in the same situation, it does not mean that you're not a good mom if your kids are struggling. And the good news is you can recognize it and be intentional about finding tools that can help. So I have done some research and found some tools, and I'm excited to share with you some of the things that I have found. So hopefully it will help you as well. So the first one, we want to make sure that your teen knows that your love does not depend on their grades or their performance, their friend group, or any other factor. And that includes their choices and their behavior. And some of our highly sensitive kids might perceive there's times when you need to talk with them about difficult choices and consequences for that. But they might perceive that as, oh, well, I guess she doesn't love me or he doesn't love me because I made this really poor choice. So just constantly reiterating that I love you no matter what. That's the message we want to give across, even if we're not pleased with their choices sometimes. And just remembering that their brains are still developing. So we want to love them just as they are now, not, oh, someday when, but now. And we want to learn their love language and be intentional about expressing love in that way. And if you are interested in learning your teen's love language, you can go to episode 42. Emily and I did an episode called Exploring Children's Love Languages. And we go through and give examples in each area of how you might express love to your child in that way and how to tell what your child's love language is. But just two that I want to touch on is physical touch is important with our teenagers, even as they get older. I have found that with my younger kids, it's easier to incorporate physical touch. And I am not a super touchy-feely person. That's not my primary love language, although I've gotten more comfortable with it since my own childhood when I didn't even like to give hugs, like hardly ever. But that's something I'm trying to be intentional about with my older two, even though it's not as easy. I'm not always sitting on the couch cuddling with them and reading a book, or doing a bedtime routine where I tickle their back and sing a song every night. So with my 13-year-old, he still likes his back scratched or, you know, back tickles, massages. So I will try to incorporate that in often. And I do still give him hugs, and he is much taller than me. He's almost 6 foot and I'm barely 5'4". So I have to stand on my tippy toes. And, but I do still try to hug him, even if he doesn't seem to love it as much, because I think it's just important to express love in different ways, unless they tell you that they absolutely don't want you to do that. And another one is words of affirmation, and to just express, I am proud of you, out of the blue, when not because they got straight A's, not because they did amazing in their band concert or whatever, but just, I love you. I'm proud of you. You're an amazing kid. And I did this with my teenager the other night. We were in the car, just the two of us together, and he had just been talking to a friend and then hung up. And I just said, hey, I want you to know that I'm really proud of you and the person that you are. And I really love you. You're an amazing kid. And also, I noticed that you're a really good friend to your friends. And I just heard you talking to that friend, and I think that you're really thoughtful and you're a great friend, or something like that. And he just said, cool. And he didn't really say much, but I think that maybe deep down it meant something to him. And especially because I know that his one of his two primary love languages is words of affirmation. So that's really important to him. And we want to be sure that we compliment more than we criticize or correct, and call out as many positives as possible and end the day on a positive note. And I try to do this with my kids. For example, when I'm tucking them into bed, I noticed you were patient with your brother today, even though he was annoying you. And I appreciate that. I noticed that. We have a kindness jar in our house, and I write down when someone does something kind, and then we put it in the jar. And so I'm trying to point out those positives throughout the day as well as I'm, you know, I try to make a point of, oh, I'm going to write that down and put it in the kindness jar because you did awesome with that, or I'm really proud of you, or nice job being kind, even though you were frustrated, just trying to reiterate the importance of kindness and those positives. And then, of course, connecting often is important, and one-on-one time is important, and it doesn't have to be a huge thing. It can look like just setting aside 5 or 10 intentional minutes where you don't have your phone, you're just talking with your kid or reading a book or listening to music or whatever it is with your teen. Even if they want to show you something, you know, on YouTube or whatever that is important to them, that's still one-on-one time. That's still connection time. Okay. And then second, we want to incorporate growth mindset. So many teens are stuck in this fixed mindset about who they are and what they can and cannot accomplish, and like how to move forward. So we want to bring what we're learning about growth mindset into family conversations. And if you're not learning about growth mindset intentionally, there's lots of resources out there where you can, but you can talk about your brain and use words like neuroplasticity and comment on areas where you see your teen grow. And even if your teenager seems to kind of reject that, you can still incorporate messages here and there into your interactions and just remind them that their abilities are not fixed. Just because they might not be good at something right now doesn't mean that they can't get good at it and be amazing at it if they keep trying. And you also want to lead by example. So you could say something like, I used to not be great at cooking, but I've had a lot of practice and I really enjoy cooking for my family now, just sort of in passing. And you don't have to say, see, that's an example of growth mindset. You can just say that statement and just move on. And it's just showing that, you know, there is room for growth. And I had a conversation with one of my kids the other night, and he was really frustrated and kind of emotional and just saying, like, I feel like my future is going to be really bad. I thought I knew what I wanted to do and now I don't. And I just don't think that I'm going to have a really great life or something like that. And I told him that his future is not set and he doesn't have to know what he wants to do for the rest of his life right now, and that his ideas will change and his abilities will change and he will learn and grow. And what he wants to do right now might be completely different than what he wants to do in 3 years or in 5 years or in 10 years. And that's okay. And we constantly grow and evolve, and it's okay. And I gave him an example from my life. And I think that maybe that was kind of eye-opening to him. I guess we haven't talked about this very much, but it maybe seemed to sort of take a little bit of the pressure off. Number three, we want to make room for failure. So mistakes and sort of setbacks can crush your delicate self-esteem and your child's confidence. So your voice is essential in these situations. When we criticize or panic or gloss over failure, then we're going to emphasize a fixed mindset. And that basically sends the message that this mistake means it's like a sign that there's no hope for improvement in the future. So we want to acknowledge hard things. Like if there is a mistake or what they perceive as a failure, we don't want to just gloss over that and ignore it. We want to acknowledge it, that that was hard, and address it with open conversations. And we can ask things like, where did you get off track? What things influenced this decision? What did you learn from the situation? And how are you planning to move forward in a positive direction? And, you know, we don't want to, when we have anxiety and we panic over those mistakes, then the emotional contagions that Emily talks about often, it's going to spread to them, and they're going to pick up on that, and then they're going to start feeling anxious about the mistake. So we want to stay calm and just approach it as, hey, we all make mistakes. Like, that is part of life, and it helps your brain grow, and it's okay. And what can we do from here? How can we go forward from here? And we also don't want to constantly step in for our teenager, because it sends the message that they're not capable or confident enough to handle the world without mom and dad. So we have to step back, and we have to let them make their own choices and learn from their mistakes. And that can be difficult. And my husband and I were talking recently about how it can be painful to watch our teenager go through this, because we know that we could just step in and sort of save him from some of like what we can see happening here. But that, especially for him, he kind of has that personality where he has to learn for himself for it to really sink in. It's much more effective than just being told. And sometimes we have to do that. And when I look at my own life and what has contributed to my self-esteem, part of that is learning from my mistakes and working through hard things. And maybe you have had that experience as well, where you've done something really difficult in your life and you just had to sort of power through and have that grit. And when you got to the other side, it made you a more confident person and you feel really good about yourself. And I think back to my master's degree and my bachelor's degree and just working through that and not giving up. And it took time and dedication and effort. And, you know, I feel good about myself that I was able to do that. So if we always take that from our teenagers, then, you know, it's not going to be to their benefit in the long run, right? So another thing that we want to do is praise the process and then tie it to the outcome. So we want to congratulate our teens' accomplishments and milestones and growth by emphasizing their hard work and their effort and their perseverance, rather than just gushing about the awards and the achievements, because these can be easily tied to their self-esteem. And then that could leave them feeling like they only have worth if they achieve. And that can contribute to perfectionism as well. But when we emphasize their efforts, it sends the message that they have worth, whether or not they fail or succeed, or if they fall short, their worth is still there. They worked as hard as they could. And I am trying really hard to do this with all of my kids and be intentional about that. Fifth, we can help them learn new and lacking skills. So adolescence is a time of huge brain growth, but it can also highlight areas where your teen struggles physically, academically, socially, emotionally, more than they did when they were younger. So they might be realizing this and be self-conscious about that. And those feelings can lead to negative self-worth. So if you notice a challenging area or identify an area of concern in your teenager, then you want to encourage them to see this as an opportunity of growth and learning and to expand interests and abilities. And they might shut down and they might want to push away from that. But if we can encourage them, then it can help build their confidence over the long run. So one way we can do this is to look for ways to build on things that they're already interested in or passionate about, and then explore options for them to use situations to practice or sharpen new skills. So I'll give you an example. My two older boys really love animals, both of them. And there is a horse rescue in our community, and they allow teens and kids to volunteer there and train the horses and take care of them. And I called the other day because I thought this would be a really good way to help boost their self-esteem. If they feel like they are playing an important role in helping these horses, and they already love animals anyway, that that might really help. So we are going to be starting that later this week. And I'm hopeful that that will be really helpful for them. So maybe looking for an opportunity, something like that for your teenager that can help them gain some confidence in an area where they're already interested in. And people feel good about themselves when they do something well. And my husband talks about this a lot in regards to our kids, and he feels strongly about helping them gain confidence by learning skills that they can be proud of and feel good about. So he helps them with entrepreneurial things. So they, my two older boys have a business, and it's mostly our 11-year-old who really has taken the reins with the business, but our 13-year-old builds the website for the business. So he has learned this a skill with coding from his dad and some web development. And then our 11-year-old has learned how to design and print business cards. And as they are doing these things like cleaning out people's trash cans, picking up dog poop, yard work, taking stuff to the dump for people, just lots of different little things like that as part of their business. When they show up to a place, they shake the person's hand, they look them in the eye, they say, I am, you know, so-and-so, I'm here to help with this. And to my husband's point, that helps them with their confidence and helps them to feel good about themselves in that area anyway, because they are good at those skills and they are learning and growing in those skills too and developing them, but it's something that they can feel good about. And then also contributing to the family is really good for self-esteem as well, like doing chores or a specific task like packing their own lunches that can give them confidence and help them feel like they have an important part to play. And it fosters independence when we put our trust in them, and that can help them boost their confidence as well. Okay, number six is to be a family that doesn't give up. And right when you walk into our house, I have this framed saying that says we can do hard things right in our front room. And I have that because that message is really important to me, something that I want to instill in all of my children, and it as kind of a family motto as a whole, that even if life is hard, and it will be hard, and hard things will just keep coming, that we can do hard things. And I'm hoping that will instill that confidence in them. But one thing we can do is if our teen is reluctant to try something new because they're not naturally good at it, if we could just encourage them or share examples from our own lives, then if they do embrace it and they do get good at it or at least further along than they were, that will help them with that self-confidence as well. And this is also true for us as parents, learning to relate and parent our teenagers, right? And then number seven is to give reassurance. So as our teens are navigating the ups and downs of new situations and emotions that might be overwhelming, it helps to know that these challenges are normal and that they're not the only ones going through it. And building self-esteem and confidence sometimes means that they're going to have to take a stance and make decisions that might impact their social standing. As they gain more confidence, they might be able to stand up and say, I don't feel comfortable with that. And that might have some repercussions. And just maybe guiding them through that and letting them know that it's okay. And they're not a bad person for moving on from a toxic relationship or choosing an activity over spending time with friends. And also reminding them that growth and maturity can be difficult, but it doesn't mean that they're doing anything wrong. That all of these things that they're navigating, this is part of adolescence and it's okay. And there's a great resource that Big Life Journal has, and it's called Your Words Matter. And it's a free download, and it has 5 proven ways to build high self-esteem in kids and how to teach your child to rein on their negative thoughts and what to say to an angry child are just some of the things in there. But that might be a good resource too of things that we can say just to have on hand when our kids are going through these up and down you know, the roller coaster of emotions and feeling kind of badly about themselves, of how we can use words to build them up. And I will put that link in the show notes. And then number 8 is talk about assertiveness with them. So confident, clear, and persuasive communication does not come easy to everyone, right? Many teens don't have a grasp on the differences between assertive, passive, and aggressive communication. So we want to discuss how nuances such as tone of voice can make or break a conversation. And you can point out how body language and nonverbal cues can send a message of their own, even if they're not actually saying anything verbally. And you could encourage your teenager to practice in front of a mirror so that they can sort of identify those nuances and assertive communication. And you can encourage them to stand up tall and roll their shoulders back and speak clearly, and how that can improve how they feel. And especially if they aren't feeling very confident about going into a situation, practicing first can really help with that. And right along with that, just giving them a safe space to process difficult situations and the freedom to talk freely about challenges and peer conflict and unfair teachers and overwhelming homework assignments without shutting them down, without going right to the teacher's side. Well, they probably said this because of this, or, you know, just listening to them and letting them have that safe space. And then exploring ways that they can manage these situations with confidence and address others in a respectful way that keeps their self-worth intact, even if they disagree. And that's something that in our house, we're always trying to teach and talk about, how to disagree respectfully, because our kids disagree in a disrespectful way as kind of their go-to. And it's something we're trying to rewire and practice. But along with that, just role-playing potential conversations and using a variety of responses, tone of voice, volume, nonverbal cues, all of that is part of that practicing the assertiveness and also practicing at home so they feel more prepared. Okay, number 9 is encouraging self-compassion. So growth mindset requires kindness and patience with ourselves as we grow and learn. And we know that as moms too, as we've been on this journey of motherhood or parenthood. It is definitely a game of patience and kindness with ourselves. So it's the same thing for our teenagers. And they might think that their personal worth is based on outside opinions, especially thanks to social media and influences from their peers. And just a side note about social media is that in 2021, nearly 3 in 5 girls in the United States felt persistently sad or hopeless, in large part due to the internet. And another recent study showed that teens who reduced their social media by 50% significantly improved their self-esteem. And that study was cited in Psychology Today. So it's just something to be aware of and think about. It is definitely related to self-esteem issues in teenagers. And so healthy discussions about the effects of social media use can really make a difference in our teenagers' lives. But if you notice that your teen is stuck in a negative or fixed mindset about their self-worth, encourage them to embrace self-compassion. Just like we do for ourselves here, we're always trying to send that message across in this podcast. And I know Emily does in her membership as well, because that is such an important piece of it. If we beat ourselves up and feel like we have no hope, then we're not going to be able to make a lot of progress and to be able to help our kids, right? So we want that for our kids too, and our teenagers. We want them to be self-compassionate when they fall short. And maybe teach your teenager phrases that are helpful to you. So one thing I tell myself is, I'm a good mom who's having a hard day. And maybe that could benefit your teen. You could say to them, you're an amazing kid who's struggling with this really difficult thing. And it's normal to have struggles. How can I help you? And I say that to my kids a lot too. Just normalizing that everyone has hard days. Everyone goes through tough stuff. It doesn't mean anything's wrong with you. And I think that being real about their struggles helps because it validates that it's hard and it's hurtful to not have your feelings validated, to just have them sort of looked over like, you'll be fine. So we want to be real about it. And we also want to model healthy self-esteem for our kids. And I touched on that a little bit earlier with the growth mindset, modeling that. But if we struggle with self-esteem ourselves, it can be difficult to do this. But we can flip the script and be intentional to try to encourage that positive self-esteem in ourselves for our kids. So you could say, if your teenager is struggling with math and, I hate math, it's stupid, why do I have to do math, which may or may not be exactly what I said when I was a teenager, that we could say, I've never been good at math, so sorry. Yeah, it's hard and I hate it. Or you could say something more like, math is challenging for me, but I kept going even though it was hard, and I learned a lot from that experience of working through hard things. So let's try to work through it together, and I'll do my best to help you. And if you do slip and you do find yourself, you know, saying something negative about yourself, then it's okay to call it out that you were negative and that you want to be kinder to yourself and that you think it's really important to be kind to yourself. And we also can introduce tools for our teens like mindfulness apps. And there's one that I came across recently called Mostly Mindful for Teens and Tweens. And these are short episodes that explore one strategy or concept to support them in building resiliency. And it also includes breathing exercises. And some of the recent titles of their episodes are Being a Compassionate Friend, Loving Kindness for Ourselves. And there's many others. So it might be a nice one at night when they're falling asleep and doing those breathing exercises. And there's a good one that's for kids as well. And it's just very short episodes, like 4 minutes each. And it's called Charm Words. And some of those episode titles are I'm Willing to Try Something New, My Boundaries Matter, I Have Strong Values, and there's others. We can encourage activities, create positive mantras, or list affirmations where they will be seen on a regular basis. And you can encourage them to talk to themselves using the same words and tone of voice they would use if a close friend was struggling in the same way. And sometimes it's easier for them to talk to themselves kindly if they are picturing themselves talking to their friend, or what would I say to my close friend? And if you want to dive more into affirmations and how they can help your teenager or your child, check out episode 24. I did a episode all about this called The Power of Positive Affirmations in Parenting. And it includes ideas for parents, but also for kids and how affirmations can help us so much. Okay, and then number 10 is encouraging diversity in activities and interests. So this is important because if your child, say, is like amazing at soccer and their whole life is soccer and they just do soccer all the time, and then maybe they get hurt and they can't do soccer anymore, or they have to take a break, their self-esteem might be kind of reliant upon the fact that they were this amazing soccer star. And without that, their self-esteem might kind of tank. But if you are encouraging lots of different areas, like maybe art and, you know, electives at school, and you're really excelling in this, or you have an interest in this, and then if they can't do soccer anymore, you can still focus on those other areas and encourage their strengths there as well. Does that make sense? So I think that's just kind of a good thing to keep in mind. Okay, the next one is kind of twofold. It is to give less advice, but also to ask for advice. So it's not easy to sit back and watch, you know, as your child struggles to learn, and maybe they have natural consequences of an impulsive decision. But rather than solving all their problems for them, you can encourage them in the process. And we talked a little bit about this earlier too, about stepping back and kind of letting them take the reins. But just pointing out that we want to be a cheerleader for them rather than a director. And that's really important. But then also what we can do is, you know, we face challenges too, and failures and struggles in our everyday lives as parents. And we can use these moments to show our teens that we are human and that we need help too. And we can discuss some challenges in front of our kids and let them see that we make mistakes. So with our teenagers, there might be certain things that we could discuss with them, certain challenges, and we could ask for their advice and see how they would approach this problem. This can create connection, and it can also show your teen that you're not perfect and that you are learning and growing too. And this is another way to incorporate growth mindset. So lots of benefits to doing that as well. And I do want to be more intentional about that for sure. Okay, number 12 is to listen. And it can be tempting to turn everything into a teachable moment or a long lecture because we have wisdom and experience and we've walked this road. So we know, right? But instead, we want to focus on listening to what our teen is saying and don't make assumptions or judgments or jump to the offense, which I am guilty of sometimes. But we want to begin with empathy and we want to put ourselves in our child's shoes. And doing these things will help create connection and invite vulnerability. Because responding with logic or reasoning, that might push them away. But we can still connect and we can still have empathy without agreeing with their perspective. So we want to focus on improving our listening skills rather than needing to be right or having to have the last word. And believe me, everyone, I know this is easier said than done. There can be some real power struggles with our teenagers, and they don't always respond in a respectful, empathetic way to us. And then when they are attacking us, it's hard to respond with empathy and with compassion and in a connected way and invite vulnerability. So I get that it's hard. This is something that I am personally going to focus on from these tools. I really want to focus on listening more and just the way that I respond with my teenager and with my preteen and being intentional about that. And then number 13 is to model confidence. And to remember that your teen is watching you and they are observing how you manage challenging situations and how you feel about yourself. So we want to be careful that we don't put others down. We don't criticize ourselves or make our own happiness dependent on other people or circumstances. And if you do struggle with these things or you do slip up or you have struggled with these things in the past, it's okay to admit to your teen that you are working on this even as an adult, but that it's important to you to work on it. And you want to take an honest assessment of your own self-esteem and confidence, and then embrace growth mindset, just like we want our teenagers to embrace growth mindset. And ultimately, your teen's true confidence is reflected in their mindset and their readiness to grow and learn from challenges that they encounter. It's going to be because they feel like they can do that they can conquer that challenge. And that is mostly in mindset and experience and gaining confidence in other ways. But if they feel like they can do it, they're going to try to do it. And sometimes this can take some time. So we want to be patient with them. And we can't force them to embrace a growth mindset or practice positive affirmations or try challenging activities. But what we can do is lead by example, and we can create a home environment that nourishes and encourages these behaviors. And there was something I wanted to share earlier that I forgot to mention. So I'm going to share that now. This is a quote by Dr. Lisa Damore, and she's an author and a podcast host of Ask Lisa, The Psychology of Parenting. And she says, "A teen who has many sources of self-esteem besides romantic activity is a teen who's positioned to have a healthy romantic life when the time is right. And so just looking ahead to the future, of course, we want that for them. So we want to have as many sources as we can to contribute to a healthy self-esteem for them, so that that's just one more benefit, right, of having a healthy romantic relationship as well in the future. So if you are listening to this and you have a teenager or a preteen and you haven't been as intentional as you would have liked in some of these areas, I want to offer to you that it is not too late. And I am right there with you. As I said in the beginning, I haven't been as intentional in some of these areas as I have wanted to be. And so I'm changing that. So choose one area to improve on or to implement. And it doesn't have to be perfect. You don't have to do it perfectly. And you just have to have the desire to improve and to just work on something. And I believe that any intentional effort that we make will benefit our teenagers positively and help support a healthy self-esteem for them and help build their self-confidence. And I also want to point out that many of the ideas that I shared in this episode today came from Big Life Journal, and they are an amazing resource. They have a website, they have an Instagram account, they have Big Life Journal, the actual book that you can kind of work through with your child. They have one for teens, and they also have a podcast that is geared just toward kids. So I will link some of those things in the show notes. And I hope that this has been helpful for you. It has been helpful and therapeutic for me personally, as I am sort of recommitting to focusing on building self-esteem in not only my teen and my preteen, but also my kids, and just being very intentional with these new tools that I have in my tool belt to go forward and just support them the best that I can. And I hope that you have a beautiful week with your family.
Wish there were a shortcut to help your child develop better tools to handle their big emotions in a healthier way? Well, there is. Introducing Emotionally Intelligent Kids, a central hub full of new resources each month, designed to elevate your child's emotional intelligence in just minutes each week. And the best part? Right now, you can get instant access to all of these resources for just $7 a month. Visit www.enlighteningmotherhood.com/kids for all the details. I can't wait to welcome you in.